Right, well, good afternoon again, brethren. And today I'm very, very hopeful that we'll complete our reading through of this book of Genesis. Last time we got as far as Genesis 41 and saw Joseph moving from the dungeon to become effectively the prime minister, the number one minister in Egypt. And he had just managed to reveal to the Pharaoh about the forthcoming 7 years of great prosperity and great abundance, to be followed by 7 years of a really desperate famine in that part of the world. And that's where we pick up the story today. The famine really has just recently begun. So Genesis chapter 42, and starting in verse 1. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" Wondering, you know, what to do. And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." Clearly the famine was severe in Canaan, where Jacob and the other brothers were. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." You know, Benjamin was the youngest of the lads, and of course the only apparently surviving brother or child of Rachel. So he's very keen, Jacob, not to lose the youngster, and so he sent the rest but held Benjamin back. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. So clearly he was now much older than when they last seen him as a young sort of 17-year-old teenage boy. He was now big, strong, perhaps bearded, and they did not recognize him. And of course, dressed as he was in Egyptian apparel, and no doubt they were just expecting to find a very powerful and important official of Egypt. So they weren't, of course, even looking for their younger brother, now grown old and mature. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan, to buy food." So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, "Hey, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land, to see where we're weak." And they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men, your servants. We are your servants, and we are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land. You are spies." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you, and let him bring your brother, and you, the rest of you, shall be kept in prison, that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he put them all together in prison 3 days. Of course, Joseph had been in prison for many, many years, so 3 days was nothing by comparison to this bunch who had, of course, sold him into slavery in the first place. Then Joseph said to them the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses, and then bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "We are truly guilty concerning our brother," talking of Joseph, "for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." And so we can see here that, you know, when they first were selling Joseph to the down into slavery, that he was pleading and begging for them to not do that. But they ignored his pleas, and they were so jealous of them and so hostile to him that they wouldn't listen. And now they're looking back and thinking, oh dear me, you know, what goes around comes around. We did all that nasty stuff to our younger brother, and now look, nasty stuff's happening to us now. And Reuben answers them saying, did I not speak to you saying, you know, didn't I tell you so? I told you, you wouldn't listen. Did I not speak to you saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. You know, Joseph was pretending, if you like, to be an Egyptian, using an interpreter, and they didn't realize that all of their arguing and bickering, Joseph was following the whole story. And Joseph turned himself away from them and wept. He was overcome with emotion. Then he turned to them again and talked with them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. I think Simeon was a rather hard, somewhat cruel member of the brothers, and perhaps Joseph was going to give him a little bit more punishment than the rest. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack. All right, put the money back in, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, where they stopped, you know, for the night perhaps, he saw his money. There it was, in the mouth of his sack. So he said to his brothers, oh my word, my money has been restored, and there it is, look, in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? This doesn't look good. Then they went to Jacob their father in the land of Canaan, travelled all the way back, and told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us. He was a hard man, I'm telling you, Jacob, and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, look, we are honest men. We're not spies. Well, they may not have been spies, but honesty not entirely accurate, perhaps. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. You wonder whether they'd ever been particularly keen to find out what happened to young Joseph. They could say he was no more, but was he alive or dead or languishing in slavery? I don't know if they've ever tried to find out. Verse 33, then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but you are honest men. And I will deliver your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Then it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that, whoops, surprisingly, each man's bundle of money was back in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. It didn't look particularly good. I mean, perhaps they could be accused of stealing and not having paid for this. And the lord of Egypt, they knew he's a hard man. And Jacob their father said to him, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin away as well? Oh dear, the whole world is against me. Then Reuben, who was of course the elder, the firstborn, spoke to his father saying, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. That's Simeon. That's Benjamin he's talking about now. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you. But he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone of the children of Rachel. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my grey hair with sorrow to the grave. I couldn't take any more, says Jacob. Carrying on, chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land. You know, people just starving to death, nothing for the livestock. And it came to pass, when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, go back, buy us a little food. But Judah spoke to him, saying, "Look, father, the man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down.' For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' And Israel said, 'Why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man whether you still had another brother?' But they said, 'Well, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our kindred, saying, "Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?" And we told him according to these words. Could we possibly have known that he would say, "Bring your brother down"? I don't blame us." So a typical family argument heating up here. Then Judah said to Israel, his father, "Okay, send the lad with me." Reuben's already tried this track, but now Judah's going to step in. "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. We're all starving to death here, father. I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. For if we had not lingered, surely by now we would have returned the second time. Why are we dilly-dallying? Let's get going." And their father Israel said to them, "Okay, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down a present for the man, a little balm, a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds." Some of the special things from up here where we live. "Take double money in your hand, and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was some sort of oversight. Take your brother also," that's Benjamin, "and arise, go back to the man, and may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your other brother, Simeon, and Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved." You're getting rather fatalistic now. So the men took that present and Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt. And they stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, and remember Benjamin was his blood brother, his younger brother, he said to the steward of his house, "Take these men to my home, and slaughter an animal, and make ready, clearly, for a festive meal. For these men will dine with me at noon." Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. And I imagine Joseph's house would be quite a smart property. After all, he was the prime minister in the world's leading empire of the time. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house. This was not normal. What's going on here? And already they know this is a hard man, and he's made this very sort of powerful bargain with them, and now for some reason they're going off to his house. Uh-oh, what's afoot here? And they said, "Oh no, it's because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may seek an occasion against us and fall upon us," meaning like to take us slaves with our donkeys, and that's us. We've had it. It's the end. When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, "Oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. You remember that. But it happened when we came to the encampment on the way back that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back in our hand, and we brought down other money in our hands to buy more food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks. We're honest men. This is just amazing. We can't understand it." But he said, "Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money," which must have been extremely mystifying to these men. Then he brought Simeon out to them, from where he'd been for several months, no doubt, in the prison. So the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and they gave their donkeys feed as well. Then they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they would eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house, and bowed down before him to the earth. And remember, of course, that apart from Benjamin, they were all seniors to Joseph, and yet here they were, bowing down to Joseph, the second youngest. Then he asked about their well-being and said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?" And they answered, "Your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive." And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves. Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Now his heart yearned for his brother. So Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep. And he went into his chamber and wept there. So he was so overcome with emotion, quite an emotional man by the looks of it, that he had to hurry out of the room into his private sort of bedroom to weep there. He was just so overcome by, gratitude and a fondness for his younger brother, and probably wondering how long he could keep up this pretense. Then he washed his face and came back out. And he restrained himself, controlled himself, and said, "Okay, serve the bread. Let's have dinner." So they set him a place by himself, and then by themselves, and Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat food with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked in astonishment at one another, thinking, we're all lined up, oldest, then the next, then the next, all the way down to the youngest. Well, that's an amazing coincidence. Then he took servings to them from before him, but Benjamin's serving was five times as much as any of theirs. So they drank and were merry with him. So fun time, big meal, lots of food, wine, and they could relax a little bit more and have a very good time. And he commanded the steward, chapter 44, verse 1, of his house, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also put my cup, the silver cup, the special one, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money." So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. And when they had gone out of the city, and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, "Get up, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing.'" So he sent him off with this special mission. So he overtook them, and he spoke to them the same words. And they said to him, "Why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. We wouldn't steal anything. Don't be ridiculous. Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. We brought the money back. We didn't even keep that money. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? I mean, it's just a nonsensical accusation. Well, with whomever of your servants it is found, let him die. And we also will be my Lord's slaves." Oops, probably an incautious statement. They already knew from the first visit that money had somehow made its way magically back into their sacks. Perhaps they'd been slightly more cautious about these promises of what they would and would not do. And he said, "Okay, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless." Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So the man searched, and he began with the oldest, Reuben, and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Oh dear. Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey, and returned to the city, because they said, "Look, you find it, and that man dies, and we all become your slaves." So they sold Joseph into slavery, a number of years before, and here and now they're all traipsing off themselves, having virtually sold themselves into slavery according to their promise. So Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there, and they fell before him on the ground. And I guess that means just where it says, they just lay down face on the ground, can't get any lower than that. And they're obviously humbling themselves and no idea what they could do. This was like, this is the universe is just dropping out for them. And Joseph said to them, still playing the hard man, "What deed is this that you've done? Did you not know that I, that such a man as I can certainly practice, excuse me, divination?" Then Judah said, "What shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so, but the man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father." No, I'm not taking you all as slaves. I know you've offered that, but that's not me. Tell you what, I'll just keep the youngest, this young man Benjamin. The rest of you, pack up your bags and go back in peace to your own country and to your father. Excuse me. Then Judah came near to him and said, "Oh my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh." "My Lord asked his servant, saying, 'Have you a father or a brother?' And we said to my Lord," excuse me, "'We have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him, you know, dearly.' Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me, that I may set my eyes on him.' And we said to my Lord," so we can back over the whole story again, "'We said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall see my face no more. You get no more food from me. So it was, when we went up to your servant, my father, that we told him the words of my Lord." And of course, they're calling Joseph their Lord, and even calling Jacob, you know, the servant of Joseph. "And our father said, 'Go back and buy us a little food.' But we said, 'We cannot go down. Look, we've told you before, if our youngest brother is with us, then we will go down, for we may not see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Then your servant, my father, said to us, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons,'" this is talking of Rachel, "'and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since.'" Now, of course, Joseph wouldn't have known the story, would he? But now he finds out, perhaps for the first time, what the story had been. Oh, that's what they said, did they? I'd been torn by an animal and eaten up by some tiger running through the desert. Right, okay. But, verse 29, "If you take this one also from me," says Jacob, "and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my grey hair with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore," carries on Judah, "when I come to your servant my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen, when he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will have a heart attack and die on the spot." So that's what Judah reckoned. You know, he'd probably think, well, dad will be looking out the window, he'll be counting as we come up the road, and he'll count and think, hang on a second, Benjamin's not there. Oh, they've lost him. He's dead as well now. He's an old man, he's going to have a heart attack and just drop dead on the spot. "So your servants will bring down the grey hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant," that's Judah himself, "became surety for the lad to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever.' Now therefore, please let your servant," that's me, Judah, "remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go with his brothers." So now Judah, who had volunteered to sell Joseph into slavery to make some money, now Judah reckons he'll put himself into slavery. So what goes around, so it comes around. "For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? Lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father." I can't do it. I just won't go back. You know, it'll be too horrible for words. Chapter 45. And so Joseph listens to all this story and gets more and more, you know, emotional as he hears all the details and sees Judah worrying about the father and worrying about going back without him, and perhaps the old man dying, and Judah's willing to put himself into slavery, And obviously there's a mixture of good and loyalty, as well as some skullduggery with this bunch of Israelites. But Judah is certainly showing a bit more honor at this point. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So he sent them all out, every last one, all the Egyptians and his servants and so on, had to leave the room. So no one stood before him, while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. So I think you can tell that Joseph is making a loud noise there, because even though these people have gone out of the room, they can hear Joseph wailing inside, the combination of sorrow and joy and all the rest of it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father really still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence, probably thinking, "What? Who is this man? Joseph? Not our Joseph. Oh dear, this is more trouble. Oh, it's going to end. It's doom and gloom. It can't get any worse, but it's about to." And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near to me." And they came near, probably rather slowly. And he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For actually, God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. So still a long time to go. And God, it was, sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." So it's all really, ultimately, God's hand. "So now it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Now hasten, go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine to come. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and of all that you have seen, and you shall hasten and bring my father down here.' Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck." Because, as young boys, they had known each other. Benjamin was a younger brother of Joseph, and no doubt they'd played games and so on at age 5 and 6 and 7 and 8. And after all those years, they're reunited. "Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." So I think Joseph was a sort of forgiving type of person, put on rather a hard face with these men and so on. But we could see from all the times he burst into tears that he really was a man of strong emotions. "Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, 'Hey, Joseph's brothers have come.' So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well, because, to them Joseph was the savior, the Messiah of Egypt. And so they were quite happy, really, that Joseph's family had now turned up. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and depart, go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and all your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you'll eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded, do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives, bring your father and come. Also, do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Don't worry about bringing down all your possessions. There's plenty here, and you can have access to them.' Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts, according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And he sent to his father these things: 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed. And he said to them, "See that you do not become troubled along the way." Then they went up out of Egypt, and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, "Joseph is still alive, and, you can't believe this, he is governor over all the land of Egypt." And Jacob's heart stood still, because he did not believe them. You know, just stopped on the spot. Well, impossible. He knew that Joseph was long since dead, so what says Joseph is alive? It's a nonsense. What do you mean, governor of Egypt? I mean, that's impossible. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Then Israel said, "It's enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." So he could hardly believe his good fortune now. On to chapter 46, verse 1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes," meaning that, you know, he'll close your eyes when you die. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones and their wives, in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry him, because Jacob was quite old by this time. So they took their livestock and their goods which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and went to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Now these were the names of the children of Israel, Jacob and his sons, who went to Egypt. Reuben was Jacob's firstborn. Although we saw last time that the birthright jumped over Reuben and landed really on Ephraim and Manasseh, who were Joseph's sons. The sons of Reuben were Hanok and Palu, Hezron, Carmi. The sons of Simeon were those ones there. Sons of Levi were Gershon and so on. Sons of Judah, Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan, which we read about, I think, last time. Sons of Perez were such and such. Sons of Issachar were those ones. Sons of Zebulun were those ones. These were the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padan Aram with his daughter Dinah. All the persons, his sons and his daughters, were 33. That was the tribe, if you like, the tribes which came from Leah. The sons of Gad were in such and such. Sons of Asher were those. These were the sons of Zilpah. Sons of Rachel were Joseph and Benjamin. Verse 20, and to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah the priest of On, bore to him. And those two sons of Joseph and Asenath are, of course, quite important in looking at the descendants of Israel and where the birthright blessings were to end up. The sons of Benjamin were Bela, Becher, and so on. These were the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. Verse 23, the son of Dan was Hushim, only the one mentioned there. The sons of Naphtali were Jahzeel, Guni, Jezer, and Shillem. These were the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. So that, if you add them all up, which is what they're just doing here, verse 26, all the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, the ones that actually came from his body, his physical descendants, besides Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. So that's the descendants, if you like, of Jacob the man. The sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2 persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. So he presented himself to him, and fell on his neck, and wept on his neck a good while, which was a good while. I don't know how long that was, but you can only imagine that Israel was unbelievably emotional to see his son that he long since had thought of as dead was there in the flesh, and not only healthy, but the most powerful man really in Egypt. And of course Joseph, after those years in a dungeon and so on, and now he's a mighty man in Egypt, is now reunited with his beloved father. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now I can die, since I've seen your face, because you are still alive." Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and those of my father's house, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought their flocks, their herds, and all that they have. So it shall be when Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" that you shall say, "Your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So that's a good reason why you can stay over here and they won't mix with you. Chapter 47. Then Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan, and indeed they are now in the land of Goshen." And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What's your occupation? What do you do?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Well, your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." And they said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, because your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, saying, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen. And if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock." Then Joseph brought in his father Jacob and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Jacob, you can see he's an old man, "How old are you?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. So that's a fair age. Even in those days it was a fair age. "Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers and days of their pilgrimage." So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. And Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Then Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with bread, according to the number in their families. So they were now well looked after, and ultimately, you know, it had worked out really to the good of the tribes of Israel. They were now living in security with ample supplies of the food for themselves and their little ones and the animals and so on. So it was all working out really quite well. Verse 13, "Now there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan languished because of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. So when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan," because they'd spent it all now to Joseph and Pharaoh, they brought all the money they got in to buy grain. There's no money left now. It's all gone. "All the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, 'Give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For the money has failed, there's none left, and we're starving. Feed us, feed us.' Then Joseph said, 'Okay, give your livestock, and I will give you bread for your livestock, if the money is gone.' So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the cattle of the herds, and the donkeys. Thus he fed them with bread in exchange for all their livestock that year. When that year had ended, they came to him the next year and said to him, We will not hide from the Lord that our money is gone, and my Lord also has now got our herds of livestock. There's nothing left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. There's nothing left. You've got all our money, you've got all our herds, there's only us left, and of course, you know, the land that we own. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants of Pharaoh. Give us seed, that we may live and not die, that the land may not be desolate. Then Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For every man of the Egyptians sold his field, because the famine was severe upon them. So the land became Pharaoh's. Now, Pharaoh's rather wealthy at this point, isn't he? He owns all the money, he's got all the land, he's got all the livestock. And as for the people, he moved them into the cities from one end of the borders of Egypt to the other end. And really, of course, there's not much point living out in the fields, the farms, when there's nothing to farm. No livestock out there any longer, particularly, and only the pharaohs, I guess. And so most of them move into the cities. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had rations allotted to them by Pharaoh, and they ate their rations which Pharaoh gave them. Therefore they did not sell their lands. Then Joseph said to the people, "Indeed, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. Look, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the harvest that you shall give one-fifth to Pharaoh. Four-fifths shall be your own as seed for the field and for your food, for those of your households, and as food for your little ones." So they said, "Well, you have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have one-fifth, except the land of the priests only, which did not become Pharaoh's. So, you know, it's working out pretty well for Pharaoh here. From that day on, for decades and decades and decades, Pharaoh get 20% tax, basically, from the land. Tremendous blessing for Pharaoh and his family. Verse 27. So Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions there, and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So, you know, 17 more years to see Joseph and Benjamin grow up and so on, and have more kids and so on. So a good long time. So the length of Jacob's life was 147 years. When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, "Now, if I have found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers." You know, I want you to promise this. Now, I know you're the governor over Egypt, and perhaps you like it here and all the rest of it, but look, I want to be buried somewhere else. So I want you to swear to me now. Put your hand under my thigh, which was the custom, you know, and you swear to me. "But let me lie with my fathers, you shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place." And Joseph said, "I will do as you have said." Then he said, "Swear to me." And he swore to him. So Israel bowed himself on the head of his bed. Chapter 48. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, "Indeed your father is sick," you know, or weak, ready to die. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, Manasseh being the firstborn, and Ephraim the younger. And Jacob was told, "Look, your son Joseph is coming to you." And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me, and said to me, 'Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a multitude of people, and give this land to your descendants after you, as an everlasting possession,'" which of course would require ultimately everlasting life to possess it in an everlasting sense. "And now your two sons Ephraim and Manasseh," younger before the elder, "who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine." I'm adopting them. "Your offspring whom you beget after them shall be yours, and will be called by the name of their brothers and their inheritance. But as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died beside me in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was but a little distance to go to Ephrath. and I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Then Israel saw or looked at Joseph's sons and said, who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons, whom God has given me in this place. And he said, please bring them to me, and I will bless them. And this would be a very, very special blessing. Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. Because they were not just young lads at this time. they'd be, I guess, in their 20s. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has also shown me your offspring. And this is a tremendous, thinks Jacob. And Joseph brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand towards Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near. And he was obviously thinking, well, you know, Dad's going to stretch out his right hand and he'll land on Manasseh, and that's the older, who should get the more important blessing from my dad's right hand. And so that's, yep, that's all lined up nice and proper. Verse 14. Then Israel stretched out his right hand, whoops, and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. So Israel stretched his hands out in a sort of crosswise fashion and put the right hand on the younger. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name, and what's his name? Israel. Let my name, Israel, be named upon them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. So now the famous birthright blessings are really directed onto Joseph and to his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. They are the ones who will now, if you like, frequently be known as Israel. They are the ones who will grow into a great multitude upon the earth. Now when Joseph saw that his father had his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, because, you know, the done thing is for the firstborn to get the blessings. So he took hold of his father's head hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. You got it the wrong way around, Dad. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. You know, I know what I'm doing. Steady on there. He also shall become a people, and he also, Manasseh, shall be great. But truly, his younger brother Ephraim shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So, Manasseh will become a great nation, but Ephraim the younger shall become a multitude of nations, or you might say a commonwealth of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and Manasseh. And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am dying, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given you one portion above your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow. And Jacob called his sons, chapter 49, and said, gather together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. So this is really a prophecy. And all the lads are now coming together to hear the dad, perhaps, for the last time. And now he gives them a prophecy of the last days. And that's the first time that we find that expression in the Bible, in the last days, which, of course, could be quite relevant to us today, since we believe we are very much in the last days, and perhaps even the last days of the last days. Verse 2, gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father. And one presumes at this point that God's giving Jacob a spirit of prophecy, and what Jacob's about to say are the views coming directly from, you know, Jesus Christ in heaven. Reuben, you're my firstborn. And Reuben, we believe, is modern-day France. My might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power, but unstable as water, you shall not excel. Because you went up to your father's bed, and then you defiled it, he went up to my couch. We know that that was indeed the case. You know, Reuben had had an affair with one of Jacob's wives. And if you think about France as a country, it is a country that prides itself on its dignity and its power. And at one time French was the most important diplomatic language. But it's a nation that has proven to be somewhat unstable. And it does seem very much that the characteristics of Reuben are to be found in modern-day France. Verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honour be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. It seems to be rather violent touch to Simeon and Levi. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce. And their wrath, it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. It does seem that the descendants of Simeon and Levi are to be found spread through all the nations of Israel today. Almost like, you know, God didn't want Simeon and Levi to have nations themselves, sovereign nations, because their propensity to violence probably would have meant to be a sort of warfaring people. As it happens, it's fair chance that many of those who volunteered for armed service over the years, bit of fighting and raping and pillaging, probably came from the descendants of Simeon and Levi. Judah, verse 8, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? Verse 10, the scepter, which is a symbol of rulership, shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. And it's the case that, you know, through Judah has come the royal throne, and of course through Judah comes, in fact, Jesus the Messiah, the son of David. Binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. Zebulun, whom we think is probably modern-day Holland, shall dwell by the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his borders shall adjoin Sidon. And it's the case that Holland has been reclaimed from the sea, really. Much of Holland is behind the dikes and so on to keep the sea out. And of course, in Holland is the busiest haven for ships on the earth today. The port of Rotterdam is the busiest seaport there is on the earth. So it does seem, you know, strong indication that in Zebulun we're looking at modern-day Holland. Issachar is a strong donkey lying down between two burdens. Issachar we've always taken to be the land of Finland, which is rather caught between the super powerful Russia on the east and, of course, the Western nations on the west. He saw that rest was good and that the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulder to bear a burden and became a band of slaves. And I guess over the centuries, Finland has very often had to, you know, pay tribute to Russia and other countries, not quite strong enough to ever survive entirely on its own. And it usually buys a certain amount of neutrality and peace by sort of being generous and so on to his more powerful neighbours. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. I have waited for your salvation, O Eternal. And Dan, we believe, is mostly Ireland of today, and also part of it forming the nation of Denmark. Dansmark, and the reference to Dan being a serpent, by the way, is that you can often see a serpent's trail through the sand. It's sort of it leaves a pathway where it's been. It does seem that the tribe of Dan, as they migrated from the Middle East through Europe and so on, have named many, many towns and rivers and so on, you know, after their father Dan. And so today you get Denmark, Dansmark, you get the Danube, you get London, Edinburgh, the Dnieper, and Londonderry, and there's just many, many places, you know, which are named after Dan. Gad, a troop, shall tramp upon him, but he shall triumph at last. Gad, we think, is modern-day Switzerland, Bread from Asher shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. It doesn't say much here, really, and it's all somewhat speculative quite what these things mean. Asher we've taken to be Belgium and Luxembourg. So really, many of the nations of Europe are in fact descended from ancient Israel. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He gives goodly words. Naphtali may be Sweden. That's been the thoughts, at least. And then down to Joseph, which I think we're happier that we know who Joseph is. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. And so Joseph, you know, is a colonizing people. It runs over the wall. The branches spread out and the vines spread out and just go all over the place. I remember some years ago visiting a church member just after I was come into the church, and there was a huge sort of plant in their living room, and it was a sort of plant, and it got all branches sticking out of it and new branches coming off those branches and new branches off those branches, and it was about 6 foot long, dangling in the carpet and so on. And then a small ticket stuck into the soil of the plant pot, and the plant was named Joseph. And it put Joseph, then in brackets, you know, a fruitful bough by the well whose branches run over the wall. And so that plant was actually named Joseph because it looked just like the description here. Verse 23, the archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him and hated him. And of course, certainly today, there are many people who do hate modern-day Joseph. There are many nations that are envious and hate, you know, Britain and America. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong. And it's equally true that Britain and America, over the years, have been a very, very strong, very powerful military nations. But the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is a shepherd, the stone of Israel, by the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors, up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. So really the most bountiful blessings of the breasts, the womb, the deep, the heaven, are upon Joseph. And it's through Joseph and Ephraim and Manasseh that the main prosperity, the power, the might, and even the numbers were to come. Benjamin, verse 27, is a ravenous wolf. Benjamin, we believe, is Norway. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them. And he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. I guess in case there any doubts, he gives them about 25 descriptions there of where it was. There they buried Abraham, we've not finished it, and Sarah his wife, and there they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife, and there I buried Leah. The field and the cave, that is where, the field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. As now, you know, very old man, 147. And so we come to the final chapter of the book of Genesis. So we've made excellent progress. Verse 1 of chapter 50. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him, because Joseph was a very emotional man. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, which I guess would be I presume a bit of a novelty to Israelites and Hebrews. So the physicians embalmed Israel. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians, interestingly, mourned for him 70 days. So I guess it shows the respect that the Egyptians had for Joseph and for, you know, this old patriarch Jacob. that the Egyptians themselves had official mourning, you know, for over 2 months. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back. You know, I'm not going to stay up there, I will be back." And Pharaoh said, "Go up and bury your father, as he made you swear." So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. This was a huge procession, really. I mean, how many hundreds, 500, 300,000, certainly a lot of people, made their way up out of Egypt to see Jacob buried officially and formally with the greatest honors. And they went up with him, both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. So perhaps it was more than 1,000. Then they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, "This is a grievous mourning of the Egyptians." Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which means mourning of Egypt, which is beyond the Jordan. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. And you can see here that it's the amazing amount of honor and respect accorded to Joseph and Jacob and Israel. And yet, in the next book, Exodus, we find the Israelites enslaved. So a remarkable turnaround in fortunes yet to happen. Verse 13, "For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite as property for a burial place. And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went with him to bury his father." When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, because now they're getting a bit uneasy, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." They're thinking, though, perhaps he was just holding off while our dad was alive, but now that dad's dead, perhaps now he's going to get his revenge. He's been waiting all this time, and oh, my word. So they sent messengers to Joseph saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now, please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father." And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, "Behold, we are your servants." Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant it. You meant evil against me, that's for sure. But God meant it for good, in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Most of it, of course, in Egypt. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. So that's Ephraim, his kids, and his kids' kids. I think I've got that right. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, that's the rest of the family, "I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." So now he's looking down the years, a few decades. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry out my bones from here." He's just thinking, you know, when this happens, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years from now, whenever it is, you know, God's going to come down, he's going to release you from here, he's going to bring you back into the land of promise, and when that happens, don't you leave my bones down here. And I want to go back up to the land of Canaan. I've not lived there since I was a youth, but that's where my father's buried, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. I want to be there as well. So he took this oath from them, saying, "You shall surely carry my bones from here." Verse 26, "So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt." And that really brings us, amazingly, to the end of the book of Genesis, all 50 chapters. So I think that's very much a very good thing that we've managed to achieve there. Perhaps we don't often read some of the longer books in the Bible. It seems such a big task to do. But the book of Genesis is a very important book. It is the book of beginnings, the book of origins. We see about the recreation of the earth. We read about the Garden of Eden and the two trees. We've seen the flood in the days of Noah, when every imagination of man's heart was only evil continually. We've seen the Tower of Babel and languages being separated. And we've seen, of course, the story focused on Abraham and Isaac, and then on to Jacob and Jacob's 12 sons, with all of their family disputes and squabbles and so on, right down to the selling of the young son Joseph into slavery in Egypt, finally becoming the most powerful man in the Egyptian Empire, and of course bringing about the arrival of Israelites into Egypt, where they could be safe and secure and grow and multiply, which of course would be the introduction to the book of Exodus. Not quite sure if and when we'll do that, but I think by having looked at the book of Genesis, it's an excellent foundation for us. We're worth reading, and hopefully we've all found it very useful. So with that, we will close this particular Bible study. Until the next time.